This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It's Thursday, it's the 14th of March 2024. Coming up today, more of your feedback. Sean's looking for a new printer and also a Double Tap first.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey Sean Preece, how are you doing today?
I am glorious, thank you Stephen Scott. How are you?
I'm good. I mentioned a Double Tap first.
Yeah, I hate you. Yeah.
What? What?
I know what you're going to say. Go on, say it.
I am going to say it.
Yeah,
I'm going to say it right here.
Breaking
yes.
News. Breaking news.
I don't have anything else that says like a Double Tap first, because if I did, I'd play that.
Yes.
We should get one of those done.
A Double Tap first.
All right, yes, because Rob hasn't got enough to do. Yeah, no, that's absolutely fine.
That's right. I started recording all of my ideas that I sent him at 3 a.m. Can you record this as well? And then I send it to Mark Aflalo and say, can you make this into something that sounds good? Thank you.
And then we'll use it once and never again.
or forget all about it, which likely the case. No, the Double Tap first is Sean Preece this week, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be leading off with our top topic on the show.
I know.
Thank you.
I know.
Thank you.
I know. You are a hero. That is the first time ever I've said to you, how are we going to start here? And you said, I've got an idea. That's what blew my mind. You said, I have an idea.
Whoa. Let's not build this up. It's not much of an idea. What I did say is, well, I've been looking so hard for a printer this week. And you said, let's start with that. Which means you haven't got any ideas.
No, that's not how. Don't you dare reframe this. Don't you dare reframe this using truth.
We're not running dry at all. No. You were asking what I've been doing this week. Anything new in Windows and everything? Which we talked about. We were going through the stages of learning Reaper. I'm still enjoying that. Very
grief.
Cool. The grief,
it's not grief. I'll tell you what it was, because we were talking about the Mac so much, and I thought we really should bring in Windows, because I haven't been using Windows for a while, and I'm seeing a lot of people. No, I mean, I see a lot of people. I see people on Mastodon, on X, so people who are fairly technically proficient people who are talking about buying Macs. Even people who've been moving away from Mac over the years and are now sort of tentatively looking back at Mac. And I'm kind of intrigued to know why that is. What is the big deal? Why are people looking to move away from Windows? Because, I always, and I have for many years, and people who use Windows always say, it's the platform to get things done on. But are they making so many changes to Windows that it just feels so difficult to use now? I don't know. It just seems more people are talking about moving to Mac than I've ever heard before.
Don't you think this is a circular thing? It always comes up. It's always, I'm moving to Windows because there's too many bugs in Mac OS now. And then, give it 18 months and I'm going back to the Mac. Windows is whatever. I think everyone wants a change. We all got so sick of whatever we're using day in, day out. I don't think it's a particular, it's because of this reason. Although, maybe. I mean, the latest updates in Windows, I must admit, are a bit of an issue for me. That File Explorer with the new share and details, I haven't even figured a way to disable those at the minute. I haven't looked into it. It hasn't become that much of an annoyance where let me dig in and find out how to turn these off. I've been into the view menu and I've been all around the ribbon trying to find us a quick way, and I haven't.
Oh, I hate that ribbon.
But if you hit F2 to rename a file, once you rename it, suddenly you can't move anywhere. Your focus has jumped into the share area. I don't even know what that is yet. So, there is a bit of an issue with File Explorer, I find. But other than that, it's where I started. It's where I've lived most of my life, so I'm going to stick with it. I still have your beautiful Mac Mini here, Stephen Scott, which you very kindly lent me. But and you keep telling me, go on the Mac. It's just so uncomfortable when you go on something you're not used to. It's the old Android iPhone argument, right? There's nothing wrong with either of them. It's just I feel comfortable using this.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's what you need, right? So there are tools on the Mac that I just really enjoy using. And I'm just getting a bit fed up going between different systems, and I feel that's one of the reasons why I want to learn Reaper. Because as we've said before, Audacity is not accessible on the Mac, so it's like, do you know what? I'm fed up going back to another machine to do my edits everywhere I go, especially now I'm getting out a bit more. You know, I'm taking two machines with me everywhere I go, and that's just not sensible. I can't be bothered with that. So machine, and for me, it's the Mac. But, you know, for you, it's Windows, and I think, you know, that's fine. But I do note that there are a lot of people having issues, although I don't know how true that is, because I'm reading articles from people saying, hey, I'm switching to the Mac. That doesn't mean that there's not some exodus to the Mac. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm intrigued to know why these people are doing that, but also what is going on with the Windows system. And you're saying yourself there's a few issues with File Explorer. Although, wait till these people try the Finder on Mac. Good luck. It's going to be fun hearing all those complaints.
Exactly right. Listen, I totally agree with you, because there's so many things on Mac. I love, and we keep mentioning it, the Loopback, Rogue Amoeba software, all their range of software, actually. Absolutely amazing. I just can't get to grips with the interaction, with the navigating around. The Finder, I could never get my head around on Mac. And for that reason, it puts me off. But that's not to say it's bad at all. So, I'm not convinced. These people that say they're moving from X to Y, give it, you know, 12 months on Y, suddenly it's, this is awful on there, that's awful. Because each system's got its own quirks, if you like. You just learn to work around them.
Yeah, no, you do. But anyway, you were mentioning the printers, because I was telling you that on Access Tech Live today, we've got Canon
really
joining us to talk about cameras. And it kind of, I think, sparked this in you that you're looking for a new printer.
I love Canon, by the way. I think their printers, I used to use a Pixma back in the day to print on CDs. Used to have a CD tray and all that. They were amazing.
That's right.
But I'm finding now that we don't use a printer very often. And I've got an old, cheap, inkjet printer that the whole family uses. Very rarely, but the whole family uses. But every time we come to use it, it's not printing properly, it's not clear. And if I print something out, I need to get someone to check, is this readable? Because I can't trust it. You know, you've got to run it through the cleaning cycle about five times, because it's been 6 months since anyone last used it, and the ink cartridges are all clogged up. And I thought, you know what? It's time. I'm going to go for a laser printer. For the first time ever.
Laser?
Well, I've always thought of laser printers as business, as office printers, right? Because they always were. But you look around now, you can pick up a laser printer for under, you know, $100 maybe. But the thing is, to get an affordable one, and as I said, we don't use a printer a lot, so I don't want to spend a lot of money. But I need to ditch color printing.
Okay.
Do you think that's important nowadays? When was the last time I cared about printing in color? I'm not going to print out any photos, but there's something that makes me go, oh, I just don't want a mono printer. I've just a black and white or grayscale printer. It feels like I'm missing out. But I, for the life of me, can't think why I would want a color printer. That's the first thing. Second thing is losing the all-in-one functionality. So every printer I've had for the longest time has got a scanner on the top, a flatbed scanner on the top, you know, and you can use it as a photocopier. It's handy, no denying it's handy, but would you want to pay extra for it? In the case of a laser printer, you're paying extra for the scanning capability. And I'm not sure I need that anymore. How many times can I just take a picture with my phone of a letter, as you know, if I want to keep something as proof? And there's so many apps out there now. I'm thinking of is it Microsoft Lens? It takes a picture and it cleans it up, it straightens it all up, you know, so I can chuck a letter on the floor in between my feet, take a quick snap with my phone using that app, and it frames it all up. And is that as good as a photocopy? Probably not. But is it adequate? Probably is. So I'm looking at this thing, and it's the same old tech problem, I think. I'm looking at this thinking, oh, I could get this, but if I pay an extra $50, I get this, you know, I can get a scanner on top. Or if I pay an extra $100, I can get color printing. And before you know it, you're paying $400-$500 for a laser color all-in-one printer that I use probably, I don't know, three times a year. But it's strange to me. I feel that printers are still a little bit behind when it comes to accessibility as well. I'm worried about setting them up. I've never had a printer that was accessible. I know there are some out there now which come with a companion app and you can set up from your smartphone. All cool. I've never had one of those before, so I'd be interested to know that experience of setting it up yourself. Because at the minute, I take it out of the box and I've got to get one of the kids to, you know, input the Wi-Fi password using the cursor keys and the tiny screen on the printer. It's just a pain. But I'm assuming, Stephen Scott, that you've got a laser printer.
I do have a laser printer, actually.
Of course you do.
And I got it because I kind of, like you, felt I didn't need colour, but I wanted a more reliable printer because I felt that when I do go back to it, for all the reasons you've just said, you know, I just thought inkjet wasn't really cutting it. Every time I would go to use it, it felt like the ink had dried up, or it was, you know, coming with such rubbish little cartridges that, you know, as soon as you would maybe print a few things, you would suddenly need to replace it. And, you know, there was a time, and I know that, you know, the people who are fans of the planet will not like me saying this.
Uh-oh.
If you're a fan of the planet, close your ears now.
What are you about to say?
Because I used to buy those printers where it was like, you know, $30 or $40 you would buy them, and you would take it home, use it for 6 months, the ink would run dry, and it was actually cheaper just to buy a new printer and recycle the old one.
It's true. Don't they say that ink is now more expensive than champagne or something like that? It's absolutely ridiculous. And they wonder, and not only that, they make it harder and harder and throw up more obstacles when it comes to third-party inks. You know, this isn't a genuine whatever manufacturer ink cartridge, you cannot use it. And making it harder to use refills, which was always a messy job anyway, no one liked doing that. But the simple fact of the matter is that genuine ink cartridges are just so expensive. I am just done with inkjet printers now. Yeah. I'm going to go to
laser. I think you might make a good choice here. Now, the one I bought, actually, and I bought it 3 years ago, was the HP. Now, it's called the Never Stop Laser Printer. Now, that to me seemed like the best deal ever and the worst marketing from a company ever as well. You know, this printer never stops printing. Excellent. I will hold you to that for the rest of your lives. But yeah, that's what it's called, the 1202RW.
Oh.
Which is catchy. A multi-function printer. Now, it did have all the features like, you know, being able to scan, copy, that kind of thing. So, things you're talking about. So, no, not really. No, not hugely big.
I really want a little compact. And talking of Canon, back in the day, I had, you know, little tiny compact Canon, like the size of an A4 folder almost. And that's all I need now. I just want something I can throw on a shelf or something and not really...
Remember the travel printers? Remember those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but...
I never bought one, but I remember everyone raving about the fact you could take a... There was actually a time, and I think back to my school days when I had this, when I had a portable printer that I would take to the classroom. Because, you know, I didn't obviously have... I had a laptop at school, right?
A laptop? And so a portable printer. Did you have one of those CCTVs on a trolley as well?
Yes, right. Absolutely. Ah. And an entourage. I was like Beyonce going into class every morning, you know, with less style and the inability to sing. But, you know, I would just walk into class with like 15 people wheeling all my stuff and carrying the bags. And oh, my goodness. And my friends who, you know, ran, you know, like had Braille, used Braille, they had like Perkins as well. And they had, you know, talking machines and headsets. And I mean, it was like an operation. And of course, you had to take this to every single class.
Yeah.
So you'd been moving around, constantly changing setup. I mean, people complain today that they have to move something off their desk. I was doing it every hour. It's maybe what got me into the habit of shifting things around so much. I don't know. Maybe that
you
was it.
You can't break the habit. Like, yeah. Your printer, you say you've had it 3 years.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to change the toner? Have you used it? That's a good question. Have you used it and have you changed
I never changed the toner. Which is interesting, right? I have no idea how this thing works, but every time I print, it prints and it works fine. And you know, it's funny because you know the thing for me with inkjet printers, especially, was they always broke down or failed or just didn't do. You'd always have an issue. There was always something wasn't right with it. When you go back to use it, this thing would not be touched. No human would be near this machine. It wasn't unplugged. We never unplugged it. It just sat there. And then whenever you'd go to the inkjet print and you'd say, click on print, nothing.
Yeah.
Error. Something wrong with it.
Yeah.
And you couldn't make sense of it. Now, with this one, so far, it's been fine. And one thing I also like about it is it's got AirPrint built in, which is something a lot of people forget about these days, but you can now print direct from your phone. So if you have a document on your phone, you want to print directly to it, it shows up in your phone as well, so you can print directly over Wi-Fi. So that's pretty cool. It's a very simple printer. I mean, and I'm sure it's got tons of features. I don't use a lot of them, or any of them probably. I just plugged it in, managed to connect it to Wi-Fi, which was tricky because I had to go through the HP Smart app, which is not the most accessible.
Disgraceful.
And then once I got through all that, and once it was connected to Wi-Fi, that was it. And then off we went. There's a screen on it, I think, but I have no idea what it says or does.
Yeah.
I don't touch the machine, to be honest.
That's what you want,
though.
You just want something that appears in your, you know, when you click on print, if you're on your smartphone or on your computer, whatever it is, it's just something that appears and you hit Control P and it does it. I don't want to have to, okay, let me run the cleaning cycle 18 times and then I got to check, you know, do a test print. It's so annoying. I'm looking at a Brother because I've heard that the Brother laser printers are very nice.
So of course, I'll stop you there.
Oh.
You're absolutely bang on. You've won the prize. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is the right answer. Because Brother, there's this article that pops up on my social media feed every so often. And it says, stop buying stupid printers, buy this, because this is the only printer you need. And it's a Brother. It's like a very small, compact laser printer. It's mono. So, you know, no color. You can probably get a color version of it, but if you just want mono, it's perfect. And that's all it does. It's just a little compact printer. You know that kind? It's like a little box and the printing paper comes out of the top. You feed the paper in at the bottom in a little tray and then it comes out of the top and just sort of lands on the top of the machine.
That's what I want.
That's it. That is all this is.
Send me that link.
Very cheap. I will. But it's very cheap. It works. Hardly ever fails. And Brother are known for this. I have a Brother label printer that I've had for years. I got it. There was a shop in the UK, you might remember Maplin.
Oh,
that's now long gone.
Yes.
I got it in the sale, in the fire sale, you know, haggled for money off it because that's what I'm like. I'm like, wow, £20? Are you kidding me? I'm a poor blind person.
That's the
and I got
UK
it for 10.
Radio Shack, right? Maplin. It's
exactly, yeah.
Yes.
That's right. Tandy or whatever, yeah. So I got that for very cheap and it works fine. It never fails.
That's what I keep hearing.
It prints.
Yeah, I keep hearing that about Brother. So that's what I'm going down. And I found one for £99 over here, a mono one. And it seems, all the reviews are absolutely fine. It just works,
that seems quite
basically.
A lot, actually.
Well, yeah, it depends. Funnily enough, I had a conversation with Pi, my personalized AI, the app that I'm loving still at the moment. And I said,
video on YouTube, by the way. Video on YouTube.
Oh, is there? Okay. That's Mr.
F. Well, get in touch, you know. He'll say, remember you've got that YouTube thing.
YouTube.com/@DoubleTapVideo. I asked Pi, can you recommend a laser printer? And it did. It came back with a Brother and a model. I think it was 3240 or something. It's really useful for things like that. And that's something I didn't even think because of this particular one, the Pi one, is connected to the internet. It is bang up to date. So it was really useful. And that it just gave me somewhere to start. Because if you start looking at printers, there's so many different model numbers. You just don't know, is that like 18 years old? Is this brand new? It's really difficult. But yes, I am looking at the Brother one, but I'd be very interested in our gorgeous listeners' opinions, if they've got any, if they've used any, how easy it was out of the box to set up, and how easy it is to actually use.
Yeah, I think simpler the better. I really do. I think you want to keep it as simple as possible. I think less smart features. It's a bit like my television. I don't care about having a smart TV. I genuinely don't care because for me, everything I'm connecting to it is smart. I don't need it to be smart. In fact, smartless is what I want.
Smartless. Okay. Idiotic TV. Okay, we can make that happen. It's funny. It actually makes it more complicated because the kids are always, am I watching Netflix on the TV or is that on the Apple TV or is that
That's
on the
right.
Amazon Fire Stick?
Is it signed in?
Yeah, exactly. No, you need to go to this version of the smart side of the television. It's it can get very confusing.
Just on the printer point as well, you kind of mentioned this off air before we started, but we were talking a little bit, you'd mentioned subscriptions for HP in particular. And I see a lot of people complain about the subscriptions from HP. I having this printer, I expected to get some kind of notification saying, okay, look, to get this thing, you know, to make sure it never stops, in quotes, you know, pay X amount per month and we'll send you toner when you need it, because it's connected to the internet, right? It knows when it's running short on toner. It will.
Yeah.
But I have nothing. I don't know if this thing just runs forever. It is literally, it never stops. If I bought the best printer in the world, I don't know. I honestly don't know, but it just never seems to fail me. 3 years in, it's still printing. Now, granted, I don't print a lot. Well, my wife uses it a lot for her work. I use it for my stuff. So, you know, we do use it. I mean, I don't use it as much, but usually, and of course, it's typical, right? It's usually a form has to be printed and, oh, it needs to be in color. Right, okay. You know, that's a problem. I've got to go around to my mum's house and use my dad's printer for that.
Do you come across that a lot? See, that not, is still the thing that's holding me back. Do you ever need to print color?
Not as much, no. If you want pictures and stuff, yes, but I don't care about that.
Yeah, but you're not going to use it. Yeah, I don't print.
And I wouldn't use a laser for that either, I don't think.
No. Yeah, well...
Yeah, anyway. Would you pay a monthly subscription for it? Because I don't think I would. I think I'd get fed up very quickly with that.
No, you're going to have to be using the printer hard every day for me to pay a subscription where the ink gets delivered before I actually need it, you know, before it goes out and I need to. I can get ink delivered next day from anywhere. So
yeah,
I'm not going to pay a subscription. But the thing with HP is they've just launched their printer subscription service. So never mind just subscribing to get ink sent to you. If you pay, I think their cheapest entry level is $7 a month. For that, you get a printer and you can print, wait for it, up to 20 pages a month. And that's it. But they will send
you... What happens then? What happens when you print the 21st page?
Yeah, no,
does the printer explode?
It won't let you. And
Does it run out of the house?
When the ink runs out, they will send you more ink for free as well. So that $7 subscription is covering everything. But I'm sorry, 20 pages a month? That seems ridiculous to me. And there's different levels here. You get different sorts of printers and obviously different amounts of number of pages that you can print a month for paying more, $13 a month, $25 a month. So they finally pulled the trigger. It always seemed like they wanted to go that way of, you know what, you're just going to have to pay every month to use your printer. And now we're here. I don't know how many people would go for that, but like you said, there was that time where you could pick up a printer for $40, $50. And, you know, you think, why would I buy ink? I'll just buy another one.
Yeah.
And keep on going. I mean,
I'm not exactly Mr. Environmentally Conscious. I admit that.
Yeah.
But even I know that's not great.
That's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
Stephen Scott, two printers a year. It's not great. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, a lot of companies are going down this route. I saw this thing. I don't know if you spotted this a while ago. There was a company selling a television. And the way they were doing it was they were saying you can have the TV for free as long as you watch a certain number of adverts on a small secondary screen,
yes,
which sits below the television, and there's a camera in that screen watching you watching the ads, and you have to watch X amount of ads per week or month or whatever it is, and then you can have the TV for free. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, first off, I don't like the idea of a camera watching me watch ads. I don't like the camera watching me at all, to be perfectly honest. But I think, would I want that? Would I honestly not just spend, I mean, considering how much televisions are today, I think this is a problem. In some ways, it feels like they've got to this a bit too late. You can pick up a TV for a decent price these days. I mean, you pick up an Amazon Fire TV or a TCL or... Yes. Any brand, really. I mean, okay, I know the Sonys and the Samsungs, they're all very expensive, but you can get cheaper versions of those as well.
You could give someone a $100 TV and a $600, and most people wouldn't. I don't care.
Most panels are pretty good these days. And let's be honest, if you care about sound, you don't buy a TV with and use the sound that's in it. You would buy a soundbar. So
yeah,
that's, you know, it's as simple as that. You would connect speakers to it or something.
All those ad-powered plans, no matter what it is, don't seem to last very long. I can't see anyone taking up, even if that's still going now, because I believe that was a good while ago I saw that story come up about the, you know, a little ad panel underneath your TV. Crazy to me. But yeah, they never seem to last because people don't want that intrusion, don't want that. People would rather pay, as you said, once the prices come down, particularly with TVs, people would rather pay and just own it outright. It's the old subscription business model that we've been talking about so often. Would you rather just pay one price and own it completely, or pay less but, you know, never own the product?
Yeah, I mean, it feels... There's two sides to subscription for me, because we talk about it from our world, from the blind world, and, you know, developers who are perhaps creating solutions that are only really applicable to us. It's a very small group of people. I think in that case, if it's something that is not really going to be marketed to the mainstream, that maybe the mainstream aren't that interested in, but really is valuable to us, and I think about Soundscape, for example, as a perfect example of that, then yeah, I might put my hand in my pocket and pay a subscription for that. I think that makes sense. I'd like to support that work in that case. But when it's a big multinational company that's selling advertising or trying to sell me something, basically the whole business is built on the idea that people cannot multiply whatever the subscription is by 12.
Yes.
That's ultimately right. Yes. It. They can't look at that total number and go, hang on a minute, that's how much a year? When you add it up, you think, that's how much a year? And people don't do that. They look on a monthly basis. We go, oh, so that's the cost of a cup of coffee. How many times have we heard that one? It's the cost of a cup of coffee. And you think, oh, actually, that's not bad.
Yeah.
But then you're tied into this thing, paying it every month. And I'm getting fed up with it, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's not
I'm starting
that.
To cut back on a lot of mine, because I look and think, what am I paying for here?
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. That's the point. It may be for this one service, it's the price of a cup of coffee. But hey, suddenly I'm subscribing to this one, this one, this one. I'm having 100 cups of coffee a month or whatever it is. And it soon mounts up, because everything is going to subscription.
Exactly. I was talking to my wife about this the other day. We were talking about the YouTube premium subscription we have. So we have one, which means that she can watch all the YouTube videos she wants, and so could I if I want. The irony is, because we have the Double Tap video channel, and I'm always checking it out, making sure I'm trying to keep an eye on the comments and seeing, you know, how the videos are doing. You know, because I'm obsessed with the numbers. I want to see the numbers.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, it's always interesting to see two next to every video. Two is good. You know, two, at least one is good, but two, great.
That's,
at least two
that's
people
me
have watched
and
it.
You.
And that's us. But, you know, what's interesting is that when I go to that, the YouTube premium subscription doesn't apply to that channel, because it's not my channel, right? It's a separate channel made up that I'm a part of.
Yeah.
So that means that I can't use my premium. So I'm still getting ads. And I'm like, hang on a minute. I worked it out that it's like $35 a month I'm paying not to get a service. And I'm like, right, this isn't great. This is just not great for me. And even if I was using it all the time, my wife and I were talking about this, and it's like, really, this is a waste of money. $30 a month just to not get ads. That's a family plan, right? It's cheaper if you go individual. But then if you want it for both of us, you'd be paying more. So it is cheaper to do it in the family plan, but it still seems like an awful lot of money. If you said $5 a month, I might be interested. But $25, $30, $35 for a family plan?
You do
come
get
on.
Extra with that. That isn't just to stop receiving ads, right? You do get access to YouTube Music with that.
Which you inevitably forget about.
That's on you. What I'm saying
yeah,
is
that's true.
There is
that is
added
true, yes.
value there. You could, you know. Okay,
but couldn't they just say, look, ads only pack? I mean, I'm only interested in the ads. I'm sure a lot of people are. They bundle these things so much. And then it's like, actually, sometimes you don't want the bundle. You know, you just want it to be the thing you want.
Tell me about it.
Don't give me all this stuff.
I've got rid of my landline recently, a few months ago now. Got rid of my landline. Don't need it. The only thing I get are scam calls. I don't need my landline anymore. Can I take the landline off my internet, you know, TV package and all that? No, you can't. It's more expensive if you take that off. Sorry? How could that possibly be more expensive to remove a service than to have the service there? Yeah, well, it's the bundle you're paying for. So if you remove it, then we need to remove the discount. Absolutely ridiculous.
But then you get stiffed on the other side too, right? Because look at Amazon. So Amazon, I'm paying Amazon Prime, which gives me access to the music and the videos and the free delivery where applicable and all that, and that's good. But now they're creeping ads into the video streams. So where before I was getting, you know, ad-free content, now it's increasingly ad-driven. So I'm paying for ads as well in that subscription. So I'm not getting that benefit that I signed up for in the first place. This is what annoys me. It's like, it just moves around a lot.
Is that, I know, because they did add the ad-powered level tariff, if you will, to Prime Video.
Yeah.
But are you still seeing that? Is it now that you're, just because you're a subscriber to Prime, as in the Amazon service, you still need to pay extra to get ad-free Prime Video now? I haven't looked into
yes.
it. Wow. Yeah, that's annoying.
But again, it's so confusing with Prime, because you don't, sometimes you just don't know what is a paid video, what is a subscriber video, or what is a, not a subscriber, what do you call it, a subscription video, what is a free with
buy,
ads.
Rent.
It's so confusing. There's so many elements to it. And I think they've done that deliberately. Some
yes, I was
just
going to say that. That's a deliberate thing, because there was that little tick box at the top, just show me free to me, and that's gone. And even when they had that, every time you opened the app, it would default to off. So you would have to go through, oh, I fancy that. And it's, oh, I need to pay for that one. And you have to, oh, I've got to go back and switch this little tick box on. So it's definitely deliberate. Oh, God, we're grumbling today, aren't we?
It's a grumbly old man. Right, look, stick around. We'll get to your emails next. We'll see how much of grumbling is going to continue. We'll find out next.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Okay, shall we get to some emails, Sean
Yes,
Priest?
Please. Let's cheer things up.
Okay, well, here's Camille to kick things off. Laura reads our emails.
Regarding the WebAIM survey, I totally agree with Stephen. Those surveys are important, and if they're going to be useful and meaningful, need to be completed by more than 1,500. Surely 1,500 is not a number representative of screen readers. And on that note, shame on you, Priest, for forgetting to complete the survey.
Yes.
Lol.
Sorry.
I have no idea as to how many people listen to the Double Tap show, but that is how I first learned about this survey. The TechVI Daily email also mentioned it. Social medias are a great source of news, such as getting people aware of surveys, such as the WebAIM one, but considering how many other things are found on them, I'm not sure they are the best way to promote. As for Sean's question regarding, are there rivers in Saskatchewan? Well, wow. Well, first, there are approximately 1,000 kilometres between the south and north borders, and approximately 500 kilometres between the west and east borders. Of course, I have not verified this, but have been told that there are at least 100,000 lakes in Saskatchewan. The two main rivers are the North Saskatchewan and the South Saskatchewan rivers. When you visited Regina in June 2022, no rivers were seen or heard, because all we have here is a fake lake called Wascana Lake, which roughly translates into pile of bone. The lake is fed by a creek called Wascana Creek. Thanks again, Miss Kay, for reading our emails. Happy tapping, Camille.
Thank you, Camille.
I feel guilty now. Firstly, because of WebAIM, and yes, I did forget, and shame on me, you're absolutely right. But secondly, did I ask if there were any rivers in Saskatchewan? I can't remember if I asked that.
I think we had this conversation, but I can't remember the context of it.
You probably said it on my behalf, Stephen Scott. You probably threw me under the bus, because of course there are rivers. There are also deep-fried dill pickles, which were, quite frankly, the best thing I've ever eaten, and I want to go back.
Wobbly things inside fried things. I don't know if that appeals to me, to be honest.
You're Scottish, of course it does.
And my wobbly thing fell out of my fried thing, which I didn't really like. As soon as I took a
either.
Bite into it, it just slid right out.
They were amazing. And burnt bits. Who knew burning something could make it taste better? Absolutely.
You would love
amazing.
Scotland. We burn everything. We burn it. We fry it.
Anyway, WebAIM. I totally agree. I agree with Stephen as well. I'm part of the problem, because I did not fill it in. So I can't really complain about it. I just feel, why can't this be an ongoing thing? Why can't we just have this survey going constantly throughout the year, and then you just take a snapshot of the results once a year?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You know, so, anyway, because people do, if you just say it's open for a month or 2 weeks or whatever it was, people will forget to do it.
Absolutely. Well, look, it happens all the time. There's probably more that goes on behind the scenes that I don't even know about. There's more of these kind of things happening. I think sometimes, though, there's a little bit of the, how can I say this? That sometimes in our community, we can be very insular within our own community. So we don't reach out beyond the border sometimes. And I think that's the mistake. So people will just assume knowledge. Oh, everyone knows about the WebAIM survey. Everybody knows about this. Everyone knows about that. Because you just do. Because when you're born blind, or, you know, you've been blind, or once you become blind, you just get this, you know, USB stick filled with all this information that you plug into your brain. It all downloads, and then it's there. And you go, hang on, it's Tuesday. I must remember to fill in the web name survey. It's not how it works.
Yeah.
People have lives. People have things going on. We don't all know all the time. But we should, I think, try and get the word out more, because
we should have pushed it.
I'd like to know more. I mean, it was interesting. I was listening to something totally different, unrelated topic, but I was listening to a podcast on entertainment issues and stuff out of the UK. And it was a podcast talking about snapshots of the public viewpoint. And they were looking at what the best number is to represent the audience. Now, I thought this number was interesting, because I thought this was pretty low, but they say this is pretty normal. That in television terms, in the UK, we have 65 million people on average living here. Let's say of that, 30 to 40 million people are active, you know, adults, you know, because you got to discount children to some degree here, although you could include them, but let's just discount them for a second. Of that number, how many people are representative of that larger number overall? This feels like a school class, doesn't it?
It does.
So the answer was 5,000. And I thought, that's quite low, right? 5,000 people to represent 40 or 45 million? But yeah, they say that's a pretty good number to give a sense. And that's what they use to determine the ratings for TV shows here. That's the number they use.
There's a lot of science that goes into these surveys and statistics. So I can totally believe it. 5,000.
But then that tells me right away that 1,500 people is not representative of the blind community at large.
Well, if you scale it down, though, from the 30 million that you mentioned of viable, a pool of viable subjects, then if you scale that down to the amount of blind people, does that not...
Well, how many blind people are in the world? What? I don't know. I'm sure I saw the number of 275 million. That number rings a bell.
Yes.
So, well,
we can't do the maths, but yes.
I'm not going to scale that up, but 1,500 is not representative of that, that's for sure.
It does,
so
no.
My point is that it's not a representative sample, and I think that's because we're not engaging enough. So it's not on the people of WebAIM. It is for them to market it, but it's on us to actually respond and do it. And it's been around for a long time, and I say it as someone who's filled it in for the first time this year. So I'm not sitting here pretending I'm the, you know, I've done it every year since day one. Yep. I'm not that person.
Yeah,
I did it for my first time this year. But when I looked at that, those numbers, I thought, I feel there's a story here that's not being told. I'd like to know more. I just want to know more about who's using what. And I don't feel this is a true representation of what's actually going on. It's like, you know, when you see the switching from Windows to Mac story.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm not convinced that's a trend. I just think it's people talking about it. It's happening. But is it a trend? I don't know. There's no stats on it. And that's the thing. In our world, there's very little data to back up a lot of the opinions that go around. So when we talk about Braille, for example, this figure of 10% that comes around where it says, you know, the number of people who are, you know, working age, for example, who are using Braille today is 10%. Is that really the number? That doesn't feel right to me. The amount of people who talk about Braille, the number of blind people I hear about that use Braille, the number of kids who've gone through school who are learning Braille, irrespective of maybe not everybody's learning it as they should, it just feels that number's low. And I'm like, where is this data coming from? Because we just band these numbers about, but does anybody ever stop and say, where is this data coming from? Is this old data?
Is
this very specific marginal data? Where is it coming from? So I'd love to know.
Make the same argument about the employment figures in a disabled community.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
because they don't seem to change. I mean, they're always banded about, but... But I mean, where is that actually coming from? Is that up to date? Is that still current?
And, you know, do you take into account, with those numbers in particular, are we talking totally blind people? Are we talking people with low vision? Because there's a difference right away.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who work who are low vision who would maybe not consider themselves blind or even relevant in that statistic.
Yeah.
But they would be. So that could change the numbers. So I think you have to, again, look at the data. It's, you know, numbers are great, but they need context. We need understanding of what these numbers are and what they actually do, because, you know, we band these numbers around, but it's like, what do they mean? I mean, my favorite statistic is 83% of all statistics are made up. That's my favorite statistic ever, which kind of is a joke, right? But it says it all. Okay, thank you for that, Camille. Yes, WebAIM survey, when it comes out next year, let's all band together and actually sign that. Rebecca got in touch about the BT Speak.
Continuing the Perkins debate, there is a new device called the BT Speak from Blazy Technologies. It is similar to the Braille and Speak. However, the Pro version got my attention because it is Linux-based and has a desktop environment. Normally, I'd prefer a QWERTY keyboard, but a Perkins keyboard can be great on the go. The team at Blazy Technologies have been very responsive as well. If the device becomes available with a Braille display or as a QWERTY keyboard, I'll certainly consider it.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. And we're going to be speaking to Blazy soon on the show. We're in conversations with them, so an interview will be forthcoming, so that's good. We'll get some more information on it. If you have any questions about the Blazy, not Blazy, but the BT Speak itself, the devices, whether it be the BT Speak or the BT Speak Pro, then send them in. Email in feedback@doubletaponair.com. Drop us a message on social media and we will add your question in. And that will make it look as if I've prepared for the interview.
You see,
because
I've
a list of questions. It's good to see. So you can help make me look brilliant.
As ever, the listener's doing all the work for the show. Thank you so much.
it's the tech show where you do the work. It's a, you know, what we do is we wrap that up in the, it's a community approach. You see, that's how, that's the diplomatic way to say it, you see. Isn't that fabulous? Thank you.
You are heroes, all of you. Can I just say?
And so am I for coming up with it.
I just want to quickly talk about my Orbit Reader and Orbit Reader 20. My pin is stuck. Well, your pin is stuck because it's yours, but I stole it off you.
Your pin's stuck.
Yeah, on cell 7, pin 5 is stuck, right? Yep. On the second one that Sarah's got, cell 8, pin 5 is stuck. Is this a thing? Is this an issue? Is there a way to fix it that I'm missing? Let me know.
If you bashed it against a wall, would that fix it?
I haven't tried that yet. I was leaving that to the last method, but it may come to that.
No, I think you are right. There seems to be an issue with the earlier versions of this, which I think these two would be, because your one and the one that Sarah has, I think, are the kind of first generations. I think they did have some issues with stuck pins. You can get them fixed. There are repairs available to get that fixed.
What?
It will cost money. Yes, it will cost you money.
How dare you? Okay.
You get two Braille displays for free and you're still complaining.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Yes.
There's no help for you, really. Is there? No help. Right, Liz got in touch about clocks and calendars.
This is Liz from Massachusetts, USA. Okay, boys, you're not behaving nicely. I'm here to tell you that your clock sounds awful, Stephen. Sorry to tell you.
How
I do get
you.
The concept of having 8 clock on the wall, but really? Yuck. As to the Braille calendar, Sean, you're wrong. Just wrong.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. But you're still wrong. Skimming a calendar is faster than having to turn on a note taker or display to check.
Yes.
All you need to do is find the day, then skim down to the column to find its coordinating number. It's really easy if you're checking the dates by week. Easy peasy. So that's my take on things, Double Tap today. Warmest regards. You two make me laugh, and I might get in trouble at work. Liz.
Well, hopefully not, Liz. Hopefully not. But you tell me this sounds bad.
2:40 p.m.
Oh, that
sounds beautiful, isn't
it? That is so bad. I can't believe how, if you paid like $2 for that, it was a robbery. I mean, that is so absolutely terrible. And I know how much you pay for it as well. That was awful. And okay, I get the Braille calendar, paper calendar, but that's only good for actually knowing a date, right? You can't get any information from it.
Like what?
Well, you know, that's so-and-so's birthday on that date. How can you Braille that information in there? You can't.
Well, you could just take a note somewhere. You could,
what
exactly is it you're looking for here?
I'm just trying to find
you
the
You want
use...
a diary. That's a diary. That's not a calendar.
What's the use case for a Braille calendar? What do you actually use
it for? What is the
use
case for? Are you asking that as a serious question?
I'm asking that because the only thing I use a calendar for is for scheduling appointments. Hey, I've got a haircut then. I've got doctors here. I've got that so-and-so's birthday. That's what I put in my iPhone calendar. So I wouldn't use a calendar just to, what's the date today?
No? Okay, but I do.
Okay.
So what's your point?
I'm just saying you're wrong. Liz
okay,
isn't, though. Liz was great. Thank you for the email, Liz. That Stephen's
Liz
wrong, you're not.
100% right about everything she said, except the clock, which is a beautiful clock. I love it.
Awful.
It's my favourite of all the worst-sounding clocks ever. If you took all the worst-sounding clocks and put them side by side, mine would win.
It's so funny because you make such a big deal about how, you know, you're an audiophile and everything. And I think you found possibly the worst sounding talking clock I've ever heard.
I didn't make the clock, right? I just bought it.
Yeah, I know, but you're keeping it and you keep pressing it as well. I'm sure it's just to annoy us.
I'm not sending it back. I'm just not. But, you know, it does the job. It tells me the time. That's all I need it to do.
Okay.
I admit there are much nicer sounding talking clocks. The problem is they don't seem to exist here. I can't get any nice
not in your
sounding
house.
Clocks.
No.
Like, not in my house and certainly not in this country. It appears I'm going to have to go to somewhere else. America, I think. Go to CSUN or something to get a decent talking clock.
That's why you always need to be hands-on, you see. You never know what you're going to get.
I think we need to bring back, not the gift guide, but something like the gift guide that kind of allows people to say, hey, do you know what? My talking clock is the best, and enter it into the list.
Okay, that's really specific. Okay.
Technology vault, or I don't know, something. We'll come up with something.
Only with talking clocks in it.
Double Tap Technology Vault DTTV. No, we did that already. We can't do it again.
No, stop it.
We'll get in trouble. Okay, so now to Shazad, who's having some issues, and this is an interesting one.
Hello, Steve, Sean, and all the Double Tappers. I am sending you a carrying call that you should tell Google that the new design of Gmail is not accessible at all for blind people. I would like to tell all who use Google Gmail that the new format that they've done is totally unworkable for a blind person, as I feel that they have redesigned this Gmail in such a hard way that it is much harder to use Gmail as it was before. I felt that they did this without asking blind people's comments on this new design. I much prefer that Gmail has left the Gmail design as it was in its original format, rather than having everything put into one basket, which I find that it is not easy to use. Once again, I enjoy your show, but please, Steve and Sean, please use your influence, because I know you are very influential, to tell Google that they need to go back to the drawing board. Thanks again. Goodbye.
Well,
Shazad Bukhari.
Thank you, Shazad.
Bye. Yeah,
no, thank you. No, thank you.
Thank you.
Right, get off. Thank you, Shazad.
Not the first time I've heard this.
Well, yes, but one thing I have heard for the first time is that we have influence. We don't have influence. No. Trust me on that. They laugh at us, I think. They keep telling us they find our show funny. I think they just laugh at us over at
Not
Google.
With us.
Yeah, you know, let's be honest. Every time I start a conversation with, I'm sorry, I still use Apple, I don't know. I think that joke is wearing thin with them.
Yes.
Have
you tried this? I mean, I've heard this also about the Outlook web. So this is all to do with the new web interfaces, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's true to say, Shazad, and I haven't used it. I don't know if it's true to say that it is inaccessible to blind people. As far as I know, it's a different way of using it. There are keyboard shortcuts in there, as there are with web pages such as Twitter or Facebook that are built in. But it's totally alien to the usual way that we're so used to using a screen reader. It's a different way of doing it. Now, it could be inaccessible. They could have totally mucked up here. As I said, I don't know. But I'm seeing a lot of people talk about this, and also about Outlook. People are saying the same sort of thing, that apparently there's a new Outlook for 365, which is web-based. I haven't looked into it, but if anyone else wants to get in touch and tell us if they've been able to use it, if there's a way around it, can you roll back to the old way? Sometimes if they're using it as a preview model, sometimes you can roll back. Maybe there's some URL, but we'll definitely look into that.
Yeah, it's not something I've tried. I did express concern a while back about this, with especially Outlook in particular. Moving to this kind of web-based app design, which makes me a little bit nervous. I mean, it's funny because I think I mentioned this before, that Outlook on the Mac, the new version, there's two versions. It's like, you know, you seem to get this option now. Do you want to upgrade and try the new version? It happened with Teams recently.
So confusing.
I know, I guess a bit. It's like there's classic teams and then there's the new teams. And then weirdly, when you pick one, it keeps, every time I open up Teams now, it says, do you still want to use it? Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it. can't just tick a box that says I'm happy, go away. But anyway, so the same thing with Outlook. I got this new version of it on the Mac and it is so much better than the previous version. I mean, the previous version wasn't great at all. Mm-hmm. I could get around it, but there was a lot of interaction involved. But as this, I can just use Shift and Tab, which is amazing. I can just tab to, you know, the various parts. I mean, with the new window spots I mentioned before,
yes,
just being able to navigate around the screen is so much quicker.
Again.
And you can easily navigate it. But it just seems that kind of navigation just isn't present in these web versions. And I know a lot of people who use their tech well and who, you know, really know their stuff will probably be able to figure this out. But a lot of us, I think, like Shazad, I think you represent a larger number of people than perhaps we give credit to sometimes. We hear, oh, yeah, it's accessible. What are you talking about? The shortcuts. Yeah, there is. But we're talking about a different navigational style, something that was quite simple. Arrows, tabs, you know, simple.
Yeah.
Moving to something which is complicated, which is more of a website design. And that's quite complicated when you're dealing with so many different elements on a screen, I think. So that's where I have difficulty with this.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely an issue because I see it talked about all the time. Something, it's just why change it if it's working for us? And if it's...
So can I just ask you, what is the thing here with Gmail? Maybe you don't know this, but what is the deal here specifically with Gmail? Because if they're all going to this web-based design, is that anything to do with Google? Is that just... Because wasn't it always a web-based design with Gmail?
Well, yes. I mean, you could always go to gmail.com, right? So I don't know. I mean, we don't know what platform we're talking about here, if we're just talking about web. But I know they've done a new interface, a new web interface. So that's obviously the issue here. But yeah, I haven't tried it. I don't use Gmail myself. I still use Microsoft's Outlook, as it's known now. Hotmail back in my day. So I always just find that the web-based interfaces are just far more hard work to navigate, as you mentioned. I'd rather use a desktop client. But yeah, it seems to be the way we're going. And obviously, accessibility can't be left behind. And I think, as you said, Shazad is a good representation of lots of people out there who suddenly think, hey, I can't use this. Why has this changed?
Well, it's something we'll just have to watch with interest and also get your take on this as well. So if you have experienced inaccessible Gmail or inaccessible Outlook, or you feel it's inaccessible, or perhaps you think it's fully accessible and Shazad's missing something, then please get in touch. We'd love to hear your take on this. Thanks, Shazad. Best of luck with it. We'll keep you informed as we go. Now let's move on to Dan, Sean, because he wants to talk about Mantis Braille input.
Congratulations, Stephen, for getting a Mantis. If you want to write text using the Perkins layout, you can use the Braille editor of the Mantis to create Braille files you can store in its internal storage. There is also an NVDA add-on which will turn the home row of your keyboard into a Perkins keyboard. I tried it but decided I couldn't get used to writing Braille using the home row on the keyboard. I can't remember the name of the add-on. Search for Braille in the add-on store. You set the NVDA input and output tables to your preferred version of contracted Braille. After you write a word, pressing space back translates the word into uncontracted Braille. There is a hotkey to turn the add-on on and off, so you can switch Braille input methods. Good luck with your Braille journey, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that. And that's one of the benefits I find about the Mantis as well, is that you can type, you could leave it set to contracted Braille, and then go back and read that and say, oh, that's interesting, that's cool, that's how that works, and almost learn as you go.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure that's the best method for most people, but it certainly works for me.
Well, whatever works for you. I'm still, I still need to rub each cell on my display and try to figure out what, you know, I'm nowhere near being able to skim across. It takes me a while. But it's all these things that are just so interesting. And that NVDA add-on, by the way, I believe it's called PC Braille Keyboard. But as you said rightly, if you just search for Braille in the add-on store, you will find it.
Yeah. And you know, here's me saying, I've moved away from PC. And every time I move away from it, I get drawn back in. what was that line in The Godfather?
First you think you're out and they drag you back in.
Yeah. Never seen The Godfather. Do you know that? I've never, as much as I'm a mafia Nor fan,
me.
And in some cases look like a mafia don.
Yes. You do.
But only by look. Only by look, I promise you. Yeah, that is weird. I've never watched The Godfather. I really must do that.
That's too long. Who's got time for that? Anything longer than an hour?
There's three of them.
Yeah, forget it. I just watched the clips on YouTube. That's all you need.
I've seen. Yeah, that's pretty much all I've seen as well. Okay, so thank you, Dan, for that. You know, one thing I didn't ask you at the top of the show, and I promised I was going to ask you, was your thoughts on Glidance. We didn't even get to that.
Of course.
God, we started off the show saying we've nothing to talk about, and we're at the end.
No, this is ridiculous. And we have no time left.
This is utterly ridiculous.
Do you know what it is? Again, like with everything, like when I tested out the .Lumina, what's it called? Lumina? Luma?
No.
Lumin.
No. Nope.
There we go.
There we are.
When I tried out the .Lumin at VNS.
I just thought I'd leave you on that one.
I know. Thanks for helping me out. At the Zero Project, none of them sounded correct, even the right one. Again, it's about, this needs to be proven to me. I'm all about the research and the development and, hey, how can we harness the power of this technology? I'm all for that, absolutely. Maybe there's something just waiting to be discovered, which is the best way to navigate, or it gives us an added functionality. But it still needs to be proven. Until we get these in our hands, I'm still not convinced.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know. And it's, we have to try these things. But of course, cost is the barrier always. And it was interesting when Amos Miller said to us yesterday that he hopes the price will be around the same cost of a smartphone.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's an interesting price. But of course, as he said himself, that's quite a range. Depends on which one you want.
Yes.
Do I want the 16 Plus Pro Max version, you know, with 2 terabytes of storage? Because that's very different to the SE, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But we shall see what that comes to in reality. That is it for today. Up next, and tomorrow, I should say, on the podcast, we are going to be talking to the man behind the Type Ahead software that is the AI screen, I'm calling it assistant, to a screen reader.
Yes.
We'll get into that tomorrow. Double Taps back then. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm Sean Preece. Join me monthly for Sean of the Shed, where I introduce you to all the technology that could be so useful to us as blind or partially sighted people. Find Sean of the Shed wherever you find all your podcasts.